Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas. Loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I'm an editor at HowStuffWorks.com. Sitting across from me, as usual, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
Hey there! So, Chris, let's think back about a century or so, actually a little bit more than that.
Okay.
Did you know that one of the more popular ways of getting around in the earliest days of the horseless carriage was in an electric vehicle?
Yes, but I actually had a course in college where we studied that. So I'll pretend, no, Jonathan, I had no idea.
Well, Chris, you ignorant man, I'm going to enlighten you now. If only you had spent some hard-earned cash on an education, then you would know that the electric car is nothing new in a sense. We've had electric cars for quite some time. They in fact predate the internal combustion engine car.
Yeah, it's funny to look at the alternative methods for powering a car.
Yep.
These days, because of course, electric is one of the more common ways to talk about it, or hybrids.
Yeah.
Again, not new. There are other things too, like talking about, ethanol and plant-based fuels.
Biodiesel, sure.
These kinds of things were talked about at the beginning of the whole car thing, when people were saying, you know, oh, well, what would we use to power an engine or power a motor to make this happen? And they ran through these things. Eventually, petroleum won out.
Yeah.
And the reason this is so challenging now is because the petroleum infrastructure is so well established.
Exactly.
But it's amazing to think about, because we think, oh, well, you know, electric cars, well, they're new. Well, not really. But the problem is the technology – hasn't been worked on in so long, at least by as many people.
Right, yeah. When you go back to the earliest electric vehicles, they were very limited. You could not go very far because the batteries would run out of charge. They were not necessarily rechargeable.
Mm-hmm.
You had massive batteries, so that meant that it added to the overall weight of the vehicle itself. They didn't go very fast. They seemed to be all right for getting around like a city.
Yeah.
In the late 19th century. But any difficult terrain, it would start to have problems. The steam-powered cars actually ended up being more popular than electric ones because they could go much faster. And they were not necessarily the best choice either because they were not terribly efficient. You had to, you know, get the boiler heated up before you could go anywhere. You had to actually start generating steam before you could make the vehicle go.
Yeah.
And there's always the possibility that it could blow up real good.
Yeah.
Which not something you necessarily want when you're gonna take a little trip down to grandma's, is to have the steam boiler explode on the way there. That's generally what we consider a bad thing.
Yeah, it's sort of counterproductive.
Yeah, not
in the
so
whole
great
transportation world.
But gas-powered cars, they had the power and the versatility that people wanted in those early days of travel. And because of that, and because we did build this huge infrastructure to support those sort of cars, there was a lot of momentum built up.
Uh-huh.
Right? Yeah, to use a term in a way that I wasn't intending, but there, yeah, exactly. They had built up a lot of momentum, and it meant that any new, quote unquote, new developments in this technology was going to be met with resistance. Not necessarily, you know, something that people were consciously trying to resist, but just from the very nature of how the industry developed.
Yeah.
So
resistance.
Oh, man, I just can't get away from it. So I'll embrace it. So the electric car is making kind of a comeback, depending upon who you ask.
Yeah.
Whom you ask.
Yes. Well, yeah, it's been in the news a lot, especially during the election cycle here in America.
Yes.
But do you want to go back and start talking about some of these early vehicles first? We could kind of talk about where we are now.
Sure. If you've got some information on early vehicles, I'd love to hear it.
Okay. Well, I found a very interesting timeline that suggested that it was a Scottish inventor, Robert Anderson, who came up with a very, very basic electric car with non-rechargeable batteries. That seems like a problem, especially in somewhere in the early 1830s, is when they started working on that. And, you know, they kept working on that. I also have, Gaston Planté, a French physicist who in 1859 had a rechargeable lead acid battery. Actually, the lead acid battery has been sort of the staple for electric cars for a while.
Yeah.
But, they're extremely heavy. Probably because of the lead related. I mean, just a guess.
Safe bet.
But also Camille, it doesn't have the accent on it, Farr, in 1881 improved upon that idea. And then in 1891 in Des Moines, Iowa, William Morrison came up with an electric car in the United States here. You know, they were working on those. They even had a fleet of electric taxis in New York.
Yes.
The 1890s.
Caused the first pedestrian fatality in the Western Hemisphere, as I recall.
Now you're just being, you know.
Am I not correct? Wasn't there someone who stepped off a trolley and then was hit by an electric taxi? I'm almost certain that's true.
Okay, well, I don't have that in my notes.
Okay.
So that's possibly.
That's possible trivia that may live somewhere in Jonathan's head and could have possibly been made up entirely.
Yeah, well.
Let us know. Send your email to techstuff@discovery.com.
True enough. The, they had about 60 of them in New York, back in the, about the turn of the 20th century.
Uh-huh.
And,
yeah, gosh, that's right. I have to specify turn of the century.
Yeah.
It just shows that I'm still not thinking in a 21st century frame of mind.
Yes, but in this case, it was a New York state of mind.
Yes, it was.
So, as a matter of fact, I found a really cool timeline on NPR, which is National Public Radio here in the United States, that said that at the turn of the century, 20th century, there were about 4,000 cars on the road. And at that point, it was split, about 33% each, steam, gasoline, and electric cars. Basically, they were clean, but cold weather and batteries don't get along well.
Lead acid battery gets really cold. It's harder to get that juice flowing. The electrochemical reactions that need to take place are slowed down by the cold. That's one of those things where, you know, I've heard people say that in order to preserve your batteries, you should put them in someplace cold, like a freezer or refrigerator. Don't do that. It actually makes it much more difficult for those electrochemical reactions to take place. So you might think, oh, it's slowing it down, so therefore the juice will last longer even when I'm not using it in a device. But it's not going to work very well when you plug it back in. So same sort of thing is true in cold weather. You get in the car and you turn it on and you just barely creeping along because that electrochemical reaction is taking place so slowly. You're not getting the juice you need to get moving.
Yep. Yep.
Now, it's, you know, we've made some advances since then. So there have been some more electric cars, and we don't necessarily use lead acid batteries in all of them anymore either.
No, but that was state of the art in the not terribly distant past.
That's true.
You know, there are other types of rechargeable batteries, and of course they do need to be rechargeable.
Yeah.
That's very important, of course.
Yeah. Otherwise we would have to have these stations everywhere that would have, you know, batteries. You'd have to buy a new battery every time your car was running out of juice. You know, you'd switch them out, and that would not be very economical, and it would also take up, I mean, a ton of space.
Yep. Yep. Now, of course, you might say, well, what happened? Henry Ford happened.
Yeah. Boy, did he happen.
Well, and from what I've read about him, he was a convert to the idea of using petroleum-based cars. He did like the internal combustion engine, but preferred alternative fuels to gasoline. But, the thing is, you know, once the Model T was released in 1908 for $850, basically that, you know, it was affordable for so many people, and, his production system made these cars so easily available, that they were, you know, they were undercutting the prices of electric cars, and they were far more available. So it took off.
Yep. And, then, like, you know, the infrastructure gets built around it, and then we're kind of not stuck so much as committed to a particular type of vehicle, and it takes a lot of effort to change that. And the reason for the effort behind changing that is largely through an environmental concern.
Yeah.
But it goes beyond environment too, but we'll cover all of these things. So, you know, if you just think about it from a very basic point of view, and you're really oversimplifying things, it'd be easy to say, oh, electric car makes sense because it does not produce pollution the way a gas-powered car does.
Yeah.
It's not emitting, you know, any sort of, gas that could pollute the environment. You're not worrying about all the particles that would come out of, exhaust. All of that sort of stuff, applies. And so there is that part of the argument where if you were to just look at that part of the equation, it'd be very easy to say, ah, well, electric cars, I mean, that's better for the world. So we should totally switch to that.
Mm-hmm.
But you should know, of course, that nothing is ever that simple.
Yeah.
To take in other considerations, you have to think, well, how was the electricity generated? The electricity that is charging those batteries in that electric car, which you have to recharge. Most electric cars have, around 40 to 50 miles of range for a full charge and then up.
Yeah.
You know, you need to have at least that because otherwise you would, you know, look, just on a regular commute to work, you could end up stranding yourself because on the drive there and then half the drive back, you've already gone further than what your car can accomplish on its own.
Yeah. Yeah. Thomas Edison was working on that problem. In 1910, he came out with a nickel steel battery that would last for about 65 to 100 miles, mm-hmm. according to the NPR timeline. That would make it far more appealing for reasonable commutes. I mean, back at that time, people were not driving the distances they do now, right, at least here in America,
yeah,
to do different things. And so that was an improvement. But I think another peg on the side of the gasoline car was Charles Kettering, who, 1912, came out with the electric automobile starter. And, so rather than getting out and cranking your car up with, right, a crank in the front, right, to get it started, that made the gasoline engine easier to start. And when you had the combination of that and the lower prices of the gasoline-powered cars and the infrastructure, I think that helped make a serious difference in favor of gasoline-powered cars.
Right, right. And so, I mean, of course, that's a totally different world than the one we have today, where we're looking at the various impact of the gasoline cars out there on the street. But getting back to the idea of the environmentally friendly, if your electricity is being produced by coal-powered power plants,
yeah,
then there's pollution going out into the environment on behalf of the electricity you're using. So you're not, the car's not as clean as you would first think necessarily. Now, if your electricity is coming through other means, like you have a huge solar panel farm attached to your house, and you might, then that's much more clean.
I mean, yes,
you still have to consider things like what materials went into producing both the car and the solar panels, because then we might get into rare earth minerals. But we did an entire episode of Tech Stuff on rare earth minerals, and I suggest you go back and listen to that right now. We'll wait. So anyway, now you know, I'm assuming you're all in the honor system, that you did listen, but now you know, those rare earth minerals, that's a problem, right?
Yeah.
So that's another thing you have to think about with this electric versus gas. Beyond that, you had to think about things like the cost of the batteries, because depending upon what kind of batteries are in your car, your electric car, they do eventually have to be replaced.
Yes.
They will eventually run out of enough of the chemicals to make that electrochemical process happen, and you'll have to change them out. And they can be really expensive. So that can add to the price of an electric car. And price is another one of those issues. Like, if you look at how much does it cost to drive an electric car versus a gas-powered car, and you have to take into consideration everything, like, mm-hmm, not just the fuel prices and the electricity prices. I mean, that would be easy to compare, because I'm guessing that in almost every case, the cost of electricity is going to be lower than the cost of gas. So from that perspective, they're the same. But then you have to think of things like, all right, well, replacing batteries, you got to factor that into the cost. That's going to happen. So that drives the electric prices up. But then you think, well, gas-powered cars tend to require more maintenance because they have more moving parts. They have fluids that they have to handle, like the gasoline and things of that nature. So you've got tubes and pipes and stuff that you don't have in electric cars. They don't have those things. There's the only fluids you have to worry about, things like brake fluid and windshield wiper fluid and, of course, headlight fluid. But otherwise, yeah, what I'm trying to get at is that this is a really complex issue, and it's really, really, really tricky to do a direct comparison between the two. In general, however, most of the information I see shows that in the long run, being 5 years and longer, an electric car properly maintained versus a gas-powered car properly maintained is a better deal. But it does take a few years for that to kick in.
Yeah, I do feel compelled to point out that most automobile manufacturers believe that their batteries will outlast the life of the car. So it is unlikely that you will have to replace the array of batteries in a battery-powered vehicle.
Yeah.
Unlikely. And it also depends on how long you keep the vehicle, too.
I mean,
most people, the lifespan of cars has been increasing here in the United States, where once it was in the single digits, it's now in the double digits. But of course you do, as Jonathan said, need to take care of your vehicle in order for that to happen. And there's also, there's also a matter of, shipping costs too.
Yep.
Because parts for some of these things, have to come from different places. And so, I know that a few years ago they were talking about the early hybrid vehicles, and people were buying them because they used less gasoline because they were, you know, a mixture of battery power and gas power. But they said, well, you know, the thing is the parts come from so many different places that it takes fossil fuels to, you know, to be burned to get those parts to one place to have them assembled and then take them to the place where you buy the vehicle. And some of the green hue that your either partly or completely battery powered vehicle has is sort of tinged by the offset of the
It gets an oily tinge.
Yes, it gets an oily tinge
I was just waiting because I was staring at Chris thinking, where is this going? I get it.
Any totally quite right. As green as they say it is.
It's definitely a complex issue. And on top of that, you know, you might say, well, the cost of an electric vehicle right now, as we're recording this podcast anyway, tends to be more expensive than a comparable vehicle that is gas powered.
Yeah. And it's been improving.
Right. It's one of those things like any technology where the earlier versions tend to be more expensive. And as we improve our manufacturing techniques and everything around that, then the prices can come down. On top of that, we have to remember the political side of this, where in the United States, there are, especially within particular states, we're talking about both federal and state level here, there are incentives in many places to purchase an electric car.
Yes.
Where you can get tax credits or rebates, and that helps bring the overall price of the vehicle down closer to within the range of other cars in that class.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
A lot of complex issues here. Some of them are economic, some of them are environmental, some of them are political. And that's why it's really been kind of a hot button issue. I mean, particularly that political part with the tax credits. I've seen I've seen praise for that, where people have said, because of this, you have put electric vehicles within the grasp of more folks than otherwise would have that opportunity, because otherwise it would be too expensive for them to buy.
Right.
On the flip side, there are people saying, this is our tax money. You're giving credits to other people with my money. I think that's a very – personally, this is my opinion. I think that's a fairly short-sighted view, saying that my money is going to give someone else a break, when you're thinking, okay, ultimately the idea here is that we're trying to get ourselves off of dependence on oil and gasoline as much as we possibly can. And in that sense, it is a benefit to me, even if I never go out and buy an electric car, to help reduce that dependency on oil.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly when you get into global politics, where you have to worry about who is it that owns the oil that we are getting?
Mm-hmm.
And what is our political relationship with them? What's our political relationship with the country surrounding that one? What's that country's political relationship? It gets so thorny. So, In my view, in the long term game, this incentive to go out and get an electric car could be of great benefit to everyone. But again, you have to be able to take that long term look and just suppress that initial urge to say, this isn't fair because my money is going to help someone else, and I don't see, like, I'm not buying an electric car, so I don't see why I have to pay this tax money.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, of course, whether or not you agree with it, it's easy to at least understand that point. I mean, not all politics are understandable.
That's true.
But it's understandable to say, hey, you know, I'm paying taxes. I want to see something for my money. And the easy argument for that is, well, go buy an electric car, dude.
Yeah.
But no, that's oversimplifying the argument.
Yeah.
The thing is, because they're so expensive, they're not affordable for everyone. Perhaps somebody particularly likes their car. Car enthusiasts are very passionate about certain vehicles.
Yep.
And, you know, for a long time we've had gas-powered vehicles that people have fallen in love with. So, you know, there are going to be people who still love that, which in my personal opinion is understandable. But I also would like to see electric cars succeed, because I do think they are, better for the environment in the long haul. At least in the immediate sense. Now, there's a lot, as we were talking about, this isn't something that's going to happen overnight.
No.
There's a lot of work that has to be done. One company that I think is interesting to follow is a company called Better Place, which is, an Israeli company. And they have been working with organizations all over the world to test out their systems. Now, Wired Magazine had an article about them. And their founder, I don't know if I'm pronouncing his first name right or not, Shai Agassi. Basically, they have – their website is very informative about the different kinds of technologies that they are looking at. But they're working on ways to convert more typical cars rather than building them from scratch to electricity and basically creating the infrastructure that would be necessary to power these vehicles, which, I mean, no pun intended, power. I think that, you know, if you poke around on the website, they have at least, they give you an idea of what it's, the kind of work it's going to take. And it's not going to be, I don't think it's going to be one company or one person or one country around the world. It's going to take many people in many countries, you know, working on the problem to generate a real solution to it. Because, you know, frankly, if you look at the timeline on NPR, it goes from the downfall of the electric car in 1920, basically all the things we were talking about before, to 1973.
Yeah.
And that's because people just weren't working on the problem in between. I mean, they were, but it was more of a, I wouldn't say hobby. It was something where they were testing ideas more so than we're going to build a fleet of electric cars. We're going to take it back from these gasoline powered ideas. We're going to completely revamp that. And it goes from 1973 to 1996 when, General Motors came out with the EV1, which it sold at Saturn dealerships. I remember because I have a Saturn and I saw one every once in a while.
You joined the cult.
I did join the cult.
We also had a Saturn, so I can't I can't criticize.
Which is now an orphan car. But there have been others, of course, you know, recently, that are all electric. Tesla.
Oh, yeah. Tesla is pretty famous. And in fact, Automobile Magazine named the Tesla Model S as its 2013 car of the year. Keeping in mind, we're still in 2012 and car years make no sense to me. But no, they named the Tesla Model S, the car of the year and said that it was, a very impressive ride, a very quiet, very fast car. And apparently were all endangering their driver's licenses by driving far too fast in it.
Well, the Tesla Roadster, which is a sports car, was its first car out there. I understand has a whiplash inducing acceleration.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's an incredibly fast acceleration, like just it's a really powerful vehicle. And we should also say that according to the Energy Collective, there's been a 228% increase in sales of electric vehicles from 2011 to 2012.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to know what that is in real numbers, you know, you're 228% more. That sounds incredible. When you get down to real numbers, that's around 38,000 cars.
Yeah.
So that's about the same number of cars in an entire year that some of the more popular models sell in a month.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you got to keep your perspective on there. So yes, the industry is growing, which is good, but it's still very tiny in comparison to the traditional, gasoline powered cars and even to hybrid vehicles, which they've had a few more years to really start hitting the market, at least in the United States.
Yeah.
And I wanted to talk really briefly, just to explain very quickly what makes electric cars work. Because we talked about how in a gas engine you have all these tubes and pipes and stuff. You're using combustion to help drive pistons, expanding gases, all this kind of stuff. That's what's providing the energy you need to make the car go. But with an electric car, you're talking about batteries, a controller, and an electric motor. And the electric motor is what's generating all the energy to make the car go. And the basics of an electric motor are pretty simple. And that comes down to magnets. How do they work? We actually have an article on it if you want to know. But, all right, so imagine that you have, this is a very super simple electric motor. Let's say that you have a magnet and it's, in sort of a semicircle, shape, and you've got a north end of the magnet on one side and the south end of the magnet on the other side. Okay?
Yeah.
So it's think of it like an arc. So you've got the south end on one side of the arc and the north end on the other side of the arc. In between, mounted on a pole, you have a rotor that can spin freely around in a circle, and then you have mounted on that rotor an electromagnet.
Yeah.
Now, when you run a current through that electromagnet, it creates a magnetic field. And it magnetizes this electromagnet, so you have a north pole and a south pole. Now, when the north pole of the electromagnet and the north pole of that permanent magnet that's mounted in an arc are close to one another, they repel each other.
Yes, and Santa Claus flies off.
And then when the north pole of the electromagnet gets close to the south pole of the permanent magnet, they attract one another. So,
which disturbs all the penguins.
If you just have the current running, I'm ignoring Chris for the moment. if you just have the current running through one direction in this electromagnet, it's going to align itself so that the north pole of the electromagnet is pointing at the south pole of the permanent magnet and the south pole of the electromagnet is pointing toward the north pole of the permanent magnet. But then if you were to reverse the current, that would also reverse the polarity of the magnet itself, the electromagnet.
Ooh.
The poles would switch, which would mean that now suddenly it would be pushing away from the permanent magnet as it is currently aligned. So it would move and rotate so that the poles were again attracted to the opposites. So by switching the current, the direction of current inside the electromagnet at a particular rate, you can get that rotor to turn. And as the rotor turns, which I think was a soap opera, it's doing work.
Now you've started.
You can harness that work to generate electricity.
Yeah.
That's the basis of the electric motor. So you're using magnets to turn a rotor. By the way, that we usually refer to that as a brushed motor. And the reason for that is there are contacts on the inside of that rotor that when the magnet is spinning around, it's what's allowing the current to change direction because you're getting power from batteries.
Mm-hmm.
Batteries are direct current. That's DC. So direct current is always going to flow in the same direction. Alternating current is electricity that is reversing the flow of current rapidly in cycles, pulses. So in order to convert DC to AC, which is what we really need for things like an electric car, you would have these little, what they're called brushes, inside the electric motor that once they hit certain contacts, that's what would allow the flow of electricity to change direction. There are also brushless electric motors. In this case, what you do is you put the permanent magnets on the rotor.
Mm-hmm.
So the rotor magnets are never going to change. And you put the electromagnets on the field around the rotor, and you just change the direction of current in the permanent magnets that are stationary. So you don't have to worry about figuring out how you're going to swap the flow of current over and over with a moving object. And the rotor itself will still spin and generate energy that way.
Yeah.
Electricity.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Yeah. Now, you know, some battery recharging is accomplished in gasoline powered cars through the alternator.
Yep.
You know, there are other regenerative braking and some other things that help out with that.
Right.
But of course, it's much more of an issue with electric cars.
Yeah.
You know, and the distance, it's hard to say. It's weird for me to say mileage because I always think, you know, miles per gallon. And also kilometers. Do people in, and this is an honest question.
Kilometers per liter.
Kilometers, kilometerage. What do you call it in Europe? Anyway.
Distance.
Yeah, the distance you could travel, let's just say that, is, and I was being silly, but I really don't know.
Yeah.
The distance you can travel with an electric car is still one of the big issues. It's still a reason why people are hesitant to adopt the vehicles, although they're more likely to these days. But some people have tried to get around that with sort of combinations that seem, you know, like they might be more challenging than others. Chevrolet here in the United States has the Volt, which is primarily an electric car, but it does have a gasoline-powered engine in it that can take – it's sort of like the reverse of a Toyota Prius, where you use your gasoline engine to get from, like, say, on the highway, and then as you're driving in the city where it's stop and go, it converts over to electricity. The Volt is supposed to work primarily on electricity, and when the battery runs down and you still need to get somewhere, the gasoline engine can help you get the rest of the way. Better Place envisions a world in which the batteries are not attached to the vehicle itself. So you could pull into a battery replacement station, and somebody will pull the battery for you, put in a freshly charged one, hook it up, and you're ready to go. In addition to charging stations. And again, that's expensive because that's infrastructure. That's more than just the car. You've got to have the stations available to do that. But
right.
I have to say that is a pretty practical way of looking at it.
Yeah, we've also talked about fuel cells in the past that are not too different, or a hydrogen-based car. And same sort of challenges apply to that, where you're talking about, yeah, the hydrogen-powered car sounds like a great idea. You get heat and some water vapor, which granted is technically a greenhouse gas, but it's not a pollutant in the way that carbon dioxide is.
Right.
But, you've got when that's your output and you're using, it sounds like a hydrogen based fleet of cars would be a great idea, but then you have to figure out how to support the fleet of cars. And that's where we start running into problems where you're looking at a multi-billion dollar problem with most countries, including places like the United States, which are, it's a big country with lots of people in it.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there are larger countries with even more people in it, and for them, it'd be a significant challenge to switch over. Electric cars are not quite as dramatic a shift in the sense that with the right adapters, you would be able to plug your car into any outlet that was capable of putting out the right amount of power.
Mm-hmm.
So you wouldn't necessarily have to have refueling stations designed specifically for electric cars, except when you're talking about going on a really long trip. If you were doing a road trip of any length, then you're thinking, well, I definitely need to figure out something to supplement the distance this car can go, because otherwise I'm never going to get to where I'm headed.
Right.
But you know, they've made some pretty strong strides in that as well. Tesla reports that it can, with its vehicles, hit 250 miles on a single charge, which is pretty impressive.
Yep, yep. But there are other challenges too. Actually, some that are very recent. And no jokes, please, if you know something about Fisker. But just as of the time we're recording this, it's very early November. Hurricane Sandy just hit the northeastern part of the United States and went into Canada and caused quite a bit of damage up there. And I found this kind of interesting because I found a story about Fisker in which 16 Fisker Karmas, which are expensive electric vehicles, were submerged by saltwater from the storm surge of Hurricane Sandy. And the saltwater affected the cars and they caught fire.
That's bad karma.
Yes, they're $100,000 a piece, so it's very bad karma. But basically, they were apparently stationed in Port Newark, New Jersey, and when the storm came in, the storm surge, caused the tides to swell. They got doused in salt water, and apparently, when they got flooded, the systems in the car reacted to the salt water poorly, to say the very least, and the cars caught fire. Now, they've been accused – the reason I said this, if you're not familiar with them, they have been accused of fires before. But I think in general, this could be a hazard. If you live in a storm-prone area, this might be something that you have to worry about. You might say, well, I have to evacuate, not because I think the storm is going to be bad, but there will be flooding, and if it's flooding enough where my car will be partially submerged. Yeah. You know, people have that problem now with combustion engines when a gasoline-powered car, if the water gets to a certain depth, you know, your gasoline-powered car won't work.
Yep.
A diesel might, sort of depending.
Yeah, so there are a lot of things to think about. I mean, I think the general approach, the move toward electric cars is, I think, more positive than not.
Positive?
No.
No, I think it could happen.
You've sapped my will to podcast.
No, I think it could happen. But it's going to take work.
Yeah.
And people need to realize that, yeah, it's going to be more expensive at first, but, you know, in the long run, the technology will improve, the infrastructure will improve, and in the long run, it might be, we all might be better off for it. Even if you don't necessarily believe in the human powered part of global warming, I think the air will at least be cleaner.
Yeah, you might be able to see outside of LA on a bright day.
So it'll help.
Guys, if that wraps up our discussion about electric vehicles, kind of where things stand right now, I am curious to see if this trend of people buying more electric vehicles, if that does in fact continue. If hybrid cars are anything to go by, then that's a good indication that we will see more electric cars on the road in the next few years as people adopt this technology in greater numbers.
Yeah.
But if you guys have any suggestions or topics you would like us to cover in future episodes of Tech Stuff, I highly recommend you get in touch with us. Write us at techstuff@discovery.com or let us know on Facebook or Twitter. Our handle there is TechStuffHSW, and Chris and I will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello there. I'm Ann Thompson, editor-at-large for IndieWire.
And I'm IndieWire's deputy film editor, Ryan Latanzio.
And we're the co-hosts of IndieWire's weekly Screen Talk podcast.
Join us each week for an in-depth discussion of the latest in film and TV industry news with special guests along the way, including filmmakers and executives.
Hear from us every Friday morning on iHeart platforms or wherever you get your podcasts as IndieWire shares what we've learned from the movie week that was.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
This episode brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Director Wes Ball breathes new life into the epic franchise. As a ruthless king attempts to build his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape begins a journey to fight for a future for apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX on May 10th and theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.